This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Joe Palca, in for Ira Flatow. NASA doesn't offer guarantees, but the space agency has done everything it can think of to make sure the space shuttle Discovery will arrive safely back on Earth. This week, astronaut Stephen Robinson took a spacewalk to the shuttle's delicate underbelly to make unprecedented repairs. He carefully removed two pieces of material called gap fillers sticking out from between the shuttle's heat-protective tiles. Engineers worried that the protruding gap fillers could have threatened the landing. There was talk of another spacewalk to fix loose insulation under the commander's cockpit window, but after wind tunnel tests, NASA decided against the repair job. The agency says the shuttle is safe to land as is. Well, I suppose if any journalist can really judge whether NASA is right or not, it would be Bill Harwood. Bill is the CBS News space consultant. He's a veteran of scores of shuttle flights. He joins me today by phone from the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And I'd like to invite our listeners to join our conversation about the shuttle. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And if you want more information about what we'll be talking about this hour, go to our website at www.sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. So, Bill, how did NASA managers convince themselves that this poofy piece of blanket didn't cause a problem? They certainly spent enough time looking at it and scratching their heads about it.
You know, it's really an interesting situation. I mean, in the old days, I would have looked at that blanket and said, no problem. You know, come on in, everything will be fine. And I think a lot of engineers would have thought that, too. But that's pre-Columbia. You know, in the post-Columbia world, it's very clear that any kind of question that anyone has about the safety of the orbiter is going to get unprecedented attention. As you said, they took samples of this material out to a wind tunnel at the Ames Research Center in California to simulate some of the high speeds of reentry and where that might go. The concern was that a piece of this could fly off and hit part of the back of the shuttle, and depending on where it hit, maybe cause a problem. But in the end, their analysis and the wind tunnel test showed that there was virtually no chance of this thing hitting anything that could cause a problem. And so they cleared it for entry. But, you know, you really touched on a point. They have so much information now about what the shuttle looks like in orbit and the things that could affect entry that they never had before. It really has caused a kind of, I hate to call it analysis paralysis, but it's sort of like that. They have to look at everything, and so it takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, I wonder if all this information is going to make it harder or easier for them to get back to flight, because at least for the moment, I think we're in a situation where they said no until we figured out this foam, which in this case did not hit the shuttle but was clearly seen peeling away from the external fuel tank. I mean, is all this information just going to make them that much more nervous about the next flight?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think you're certainly correct. They're going to have to fix this before they fly again. If they could show that the foam that came off that we all saw was caused by, you know, a manufacturing flaw or a worker didn't do something right, in other words, if they can show it was isolated to that one tank, that might be something they can get around fairly quickly and go fly, as opposed to some generic problem, you know, that forces an agency-wide redesign. I think the other part of that question, though, is what you were just talking about with the blanket. Once you're up in orbit, will they, for the rest of the program, have all of this data and see things that they never saw before, and so that every mission is like this one, where they're off chasing lots of what would have been small problems in the past, but now they have to run them to ground? And I think that truly is something that looms out there on the horizon. It's going to be very, very difficult for upcoming missions to be much different than the one we just saw.
Yeah. Well, they still managed to get a couple things done on this mission besides inspect themselves. What kinds of things did they get accomplished?
Well, they did. You know, the other goal of this flight was to resupply the International Space Station. And, of course, they took up a new gyroscope. The station uses these gyros to reposition itself so it doesn't have to use up rocket fuel, which is in short supply. So the gyro was pretty critical. They got that installed, and just as important, they're going to bring the old gyro down. It's been sitting up there failed for, you know, 2.5-3 years, but they hadn't had a way to get it down to find out what went wrong with it. So that's important. Along with fresh water, supplies, equipment, extra computers, they're also bringing down a lot of material that has just been accumulating up there since the shuttle hasn't been flying. You know, the Russians routinely go up and down with their Soyuz ferry craft and Progress supply ships, but they cannot carry things down. They can carry the three crew members down and maybe 100 or 200 pounds of equipment, but not much else. They really need the shuttle for that, and so that's why discoveries loaded to the gills with stuff that they haven't been able to get down until now.
Someone asked me, though, I mean, why can't they, shove it into the space lock, open the hatch and have it just vent into space? I mean, I suppose it's not a nice thing to do to dump your trash, but couldn't they do that?
Well, they certainly could, but nobody would want them to for two reasons. One, there's a lot of space junk in orbit right now, and you remember that every single thing up there is moving at 5 miles per second. When you dump, a piece of trash out the airlock, it's going 5 miles per second, too. And there's the whole issue of, somewhere down the road, that might come back to haunt you in a bad way.
Mm.
And not just your spacecraft, but other spacecraft. So it's not ever a good idea to just dump stuff into space because it just contributes to this problem. And it's a real safety threat. I mean, it's a real issue. They even reorient the whole station shuttle stack just to protect them from orbital debris. So you certainly don't want to contribute to it.
So what does happen in the next couple of days? They've finished their spacewalks. They're still transferring material. What comes next?
Well, the transferring's done. They loaded up their big module, their cargo module, and put that back in the cargo bay earlier today to bring it back to Earth. Virtually all the transfer work has been done. The next item on the agenda is the crew wakes up later tonight, and then they undock very early Saturday morning. They'll leave the station behind, leave Sergei Krikalev and John Phillips behind to finish up their increment, as they call it. They're going to stay up there until late September. They're going to do a loop around the station to photograph it just for photo documentation. And again, it's just because the shuttle hadn't been there in a long time, and they're there now, and they can do it. And then they'll spend Sunday packing up the shuttle, getting it ready to come home. And then if all goes well and the weather cooperates, they'll try to land back at the Kennedy Space Center before dawn on Monday morning.
Have they got concerns about the weather? I keep hearing weather coming up as an issue, but do they see something on the horizon, as it were?
Well, you know what? It's Friday. I live in Florida right at the Kennedy Space Center. And when I'm more than 2 days away, I don't even bother thinking about it because the weather in Florida is dynamic, as you know. And, of course, you're only predicting what the weather is going to be like during a one-hour period. So right now the forecast calls for rain within their 20-mile safety zone. But, again, that's days out, and that could very well change. I think their strategy is going to be they can make two attempts into Florida on Monday, and then I think they would wave off, stay in orbit an extra day, and try again on Tuesday. But on Tuesday, I think they would land either in Florida or out at Edwards Air Force Base.
So you think they would definitely, I mean, they wouldn't switch to Edwards on Monday. You think they would wait till Tuesday to back up to Edwards?
As long as two things happen, the Edwards forecast has to still be good, meaning they'd have confidence they could always go to Edwards on Tuesday if they needed to, and have some hope of getting into Florida. I mean, when you land in California, it cost roughly $5 million to ferry the spacecraft back to Florida on the back of a 747. There's added risk in that, obviously, and if you don't have to do that, who wants to? They have a lot of supplies on board. They could easily stay up for two extra days if they had to. So I think they'll take their shots at Florida on Monday, and then after that, they'll pick somewhere on Tuesday. But right now, just saying rain's going to be in the area, that's pretty much always true in Florida. So we'll just have to wait till we get there on Monday morning and see what the real conditions are.
I got you. Well, let's take a call from one of our listeners and go to Scott. Scott from Jackson, Michigan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I just have a comment, actually. I just want to mention what I would call our parallel launch capability that I think that we have with the Air Force, involving what I would call a Titan or Titan III, but now it's evolved into perhaps the Titan IV, booster, that ironically, during the 1980s, the Air Force felt there was a lack of security around, the shuttle launches, and for certain military satellites, they maintained a capability around what we call a Titan booster, and again,
that's
the
right.
Insider, but I would say that we maintain a capability to, launch, satellites into space. And also, I don't know if there's, any possibility of, having a manned rescue mission using the Titan booster, although it's completely capable of that. But that's what I would say, that even now, people are talking about the gap between the end of the shuttle's life, even as it's planned,
yep,
and the next space plane that's supposed to come down the line.
Okay, Scott, let's let Bill answer that. I mean, is there an alternate to the shuttle for manned flight at this point, Bill?
Well, not now. He's correct that the Titan upgraded Titan boosters, which by the way are being phased out as we speak. They're being replaced by Big Atlas and Delta boosters, but there is no manned craft to put on top yet. And it will be several years, at least until 2010, maybe 2011, before the replacement vehicle the Bush administration is promoting can possibly replace the shuttle. The plan right now is to launch the shuttle through 2010 and then move this new craft online, but that's down the road a ways. And for now, in the manned world, or piloted world, I should say, the shuttle's the only game in town.
Yeah, and I'm wondering about that. I mean, where is the? I mean, if the shuttle stands down for any considerable length of time because of, you know, concerns about this foam issue, where does that leave the whole program?
Well, that is the central question in all of this right now. I mean, NASA's on the record as saying they want to fix the problem and resume flights, but they are also adamant. The administrator, Mike Griffin, is adamant that the program is going to be retired in 2010. That's at the direction of the president. And so if the repair drags out too long, I mean, people will certainly at some point say, why are we putting money and time into this program when we're going to kill it in a couple of years anyway? Why not stop now? The reasons, and I think there's some logic to that, they need to get a pretty rapid fix on this, but, you know, they're committed to finishing the International Space Station. I mean, NASA promised the European Space Agency in Japan that they would launch these big modules those space agencies have built to the station, and there's some international commitments that I think NASA would have a hard time simply walking away from, not to mention the $30 billion investment, or whatever number you want to put on what the space station cost, that the taxpayers have paid, which isn't finished yet. And so I think the agency truly wants to finish the station. The shuttle is the only spacecraft that can possibly do that. The replacement they're talking about is not something that would contribute to station assembly. So, you know, they've got a lot on the table. They want to get the station finished. But clearly, they need to get this problem fixed in fairly short order, or the question you ask will come to the fore, and then all bets are off.
Right. Bill, we only have about a minute left, but just quickly, I mean, people have talked about a change in culture at NASA, whether that's possible, whether they're really paying attention to problems now. Do you see that change in culture, or do you think it's just lip service?
I think that culture change on that scale will take years to complete, but if you look at the way this mission has been conducted and the level of scrutiny that they put into every little thing that came up, I can assure you this is not the same NASA that launched Columbia. It is a level of scrutiny and analysis that makes some people out there think that they'll never get anything done because they're going to spend all of their time chasing every single little thing that comes up. But you can't, you know, it's the first post-Columbia flight, and I think somewhere they need to find the right line through all of this between the analysis and not doing enough.
Right. Well, I guess we all hope they'll find their balance someplace. Anyway, Bill Harwood, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Bill Harwood is a CBS News space correspondent. We're going to take a short break now, but when we come back, we go from outer space right down to something that everybody can understand, a puppy. Won't that be great? Stay with us.